Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something to help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom. And then here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers. We explore at length how these Stoic ideas can be applied to our actual lives and the challenging issues of our time. Here on the weekend, when you have a little bit more space, when things have slowed down, be sure to take some time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with your journal, and most importantly, to prepare for what the week ahead may bring. Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic podcast. So several years ago now, I was at Tom Bilyeu's house, the wonderful podcaster and thinker who's very good to me over the years. And I'm in the green room waiting to go on. And who walks in but Rob Dyrdek, the professional skateboarder, host of basically every show on MTV, someone who I watched a lot of when I was in college, when I was hanging out. And I've always loved his stuff. I thought he was a fascinating guy. And I got to know his cousin, also a star on the show, Drama, who'd read the books. And I guess Drama had turned Rob Dyrdek onto them. He was sort of vaguely familiar with who I was. And then I got a message from him like years later that he had been reading the books, and we became friends. And you'll see in this episode, we kick off our discussion with a chat about the very large, invisible Marcus Aurelius statue that is behind him in his office, the office where, in addition to, you know, overseeing his television empire out of, he's a serial entrepreneur. He's founded several businesses, Street League Skateboarding and Thrill One Media, Dyrdek Machine, which is his investment farm and incubator. He's co-founded and partnered nearly 20 brands through Dyrdek Machine, five of which have been acquired by outside investors. And then in 2021, he started a business-focused podcast called Build with Rob, and he's got a really cool foundation called the Do or Dyer Visionary Foundation, a nonprofit organization aimed at providing entrepreneurship opportunities to underrepresented youth. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Rob Dyrdek and at Dyrdek Machine. You can listen to his podcast, Build with Rob, anywhere you're listening to this podcast, and you can go to dyrdekmachine.com. This is clearly a guy with a ton of energy, a dynamo, if you will. So it was inspiring and interesting to talk to him. And it was just really cool. When I sat down to write these books about ancient philosophy, I wasn't thinking, oh, you know, people that I know. I just certainly wasn't thinking this is where I would end up. And it's always cool when things come full circle like this. So thanks to Rob for coming on the podcast. Thanks for Robin Big, which I vegged out on many a time over the years. Thought was always hilarious. And probably, as I said at the beginning of the episode, probably put me on the path to the mini donkeys and the mini cows and all the ridiculous animals I have out on my ranch. And anyways, let's get into this conversation with the one and only Rob Dyrdek. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. It's always sensitive talking about these things, but Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/TDS. That's hims.com/TDS for your personalized ED treatment options. Hard mints are a chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with your healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening. But depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year. So you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Where did you get that guy?
Man, my wife got it for me, but you know, it's trying to find like the super legit, like hardcore, like, you know, carved from stone.
Sure.
Marcus statue was, you know, a little bit more difficult than I had thought. There's so many different versions of them in different sizes, but I wanted one that was like substantial, you know.
I have a substantial one that I can't reach. It's too heavy. But then I got this little one. This is from the 1840s.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
I like to think about who owned it before me and how fucking dead they are.
Oh, I mean, I'll tell you what. Like when you say that, that makes me want to go and try to hunt down like the oldest possible one. I was looking at the coins, trying to get by some of the coins with his head on them.
Yeah, I have one of those somewhere.
You know, here. That I will eventually buy. Yeah, yeah. Because there's some of those that are like 50 G's, like some of like the like gold ones, right? Like,
yeah. It is crazy. This was definitely not 50,000. This was like a couple hundred bucks. But it's crazy to think like this guy was so famous in his own life that his face was on the money people carried around. And then he tried to be like a normal person. Like imagine how corrupting it would be. I mean, you're obviously very famous, but that would be that's like a fraction of how much fame this guy must have had.
No, I know. It's part of the fascination that I have with like the ability to distill life's truths down into words that stand the test of time and impact me 2,000 years later, where I gotta eventually like get a statue of this person, because now I believe I can create work and impact that stays on the earth for thousands of years. That's what he means to me beyond just the words, you know.
But isn't it funny though? He writes in Meditations about how worthless posthumous fame is, and how it's what he's not trying for it, and yet he managed to do it anyway. It's like he hit the target, even though he was deliberately trying not to let the target distract him.
Right. Like because he knew the same way for me, when I think about having a 500-year plan and impacting, you know, generations upon generations of Deer Decks. Like, I also know that it's just exciting for me to create like this giant multi-generational strategy I have, but I also know it could just die out in generation two and be completely over, and I'm okay with that. I enjoy the process of thinking that it could go on for thousands of years, you know.
But, and also, if you're working on this big plan, this huge thing you're trying to build, and you hate doing it now, but you're telling yourself it will be worth it because in the future people will enjoy it, I think you're out of alignment, right? You have to be able to enjoy it now. And if you do enjoy it now and you do it with purity and intention and love and, you know, presence and all of that, it actually makes it more likely that you'll make something that lasts and endures.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, you know, I transitioned in 2020 from self-preservation to like generational preservation. And, because you don't, you almost like you have to grow your wealth to a certain level, right? Because I wasn't a writer. When you write your books, you know that these could last for thousands of years. You know, books are sort of this medium that have life that go way beyond the author. Art has that same capacity. You know, having being a pro skateboarder and, you know, having a show of viral videos doesn't have the same impact on the globe for thousands of years, right? And once I began to evolve and really began to think a lot about the strategies that I've developed to lead like a very beautiful, peaceful, harmonious, amazing existence, it then began to connect me to, you know, how do you build things that last much longer? And then once I generated the wealth, I began to look at how I could actually make an impact multi-generationally, which then turned into like, man, you could make stuff that sits in the world forever. And that's what even attracted me to even finding really, you know, daily meditations and stoicism in the first place. Because once I heard that, like, you know, Meditations was written 150 years ago and like it has stood the test of time, it proved to me it was possible to create something that had that lasting impact, you know.
Well, I want to talk to you about two ways that your work has impacted my life. But first, I want to tell you a quick Marc Cirilli statue story before we move on from this. So have you ever been to Budapest?
I have not.
Okay, so you should go because Marcus Aurelius wrote a good chunk of Meditations in Budapest, in what the Roman camp of what was then called Aquincum. I'm probably mispronouncing, but you can go there. You could be in this little village where he wrote it. There's even like a hot springs that is open to the public that like the Romans would have used. Like you're using the same spring coming up from the earth that like potentially Marcus Aurelius used. But anyways, in this museum at Aquincum, they have a statue, and it's a statue of the emperor. But what really struck me about it, seeing the sort of just the head of Marcus Aurelius behind you, what struck me about this statue is it was a statue for what was the cult of the emperor. So the emperor is worshipped as a god in his own life, and they would pray to him and make sacrifices to him. But here's what's interesting about the statue. The statue is the body of the Roman male emperor, and then it goes to the neck, and then the head was replaceable, right? Mm. So each new emperor would come along, and they would just carve a new head. They were like, why should we – it's hard to make a statue. Why should we do all this other work that nobody really cares about? All that matters is the face. And I loved – and I think Marcus would have appreciated the idea of like – we're just a placeholder. Like they're swapping us in and out. And like as important and as well known as our face might be, as soon as our moment in the sun is done, somebody else comes along and replaces us.
Yeah. Yeah. And think about the rapid rate of replacement, you know, because he lived pretty relatively old for the time, you know, compared to the average person. And really everybody was dying at like 40, you know. And so it's like this idea that, you know, we're entering this age of where, you know, people are starting to live, went from 40 to 80 in 100 years. And we're on the cusp of curing the disease that is aging, that people could be, you know, living to 150, 200 years, you know.
Yeah, well, there was a year before, several generations before Marcus, and it's called the Year of Five Emperors. So they had five in 1 year. Like they just kept dying or being killed. And so the idea is, none of this is as stable and none of us are as permanent as we'd like to think we are.
Yeah.
Well, look, I told you this when we met at Tom Bilyeu's house. Obviously, it was a silly TV show, but I feel like I partly live in the country and have donkeys and animals because you had a reality show on MTV when I was in college and you're like, fuck it, I'm going to get a horse. And I was like, you can just do that? So you never know the kind of impact you can have on a person.
Yeah, listen to me. A lot of people went out and bought mini horses after Robin Big, and every single one of them regretted it because a mini horse is not – look, you think – like the same way that I thought I was purchasing a dog, like, it's just a dog that's a little less maneuverable. It's full-fledged livestock, and I could not wait till when we ended – Robin Big to get rid of that horse. You know what I mean? It couldn't have happened too soon because that was a mean piece of livestock as opposed to a sweet little pony. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't have horses because I had heard that about horses and the donkeys are friendly. And I have a little bit more space than I think you did in the Hollywood Hills. But is the horse still around?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty
sure
forever. Yeah, I think he lives in Burbank right now. You know, when we shot the last season of Fantasy Factory, we wrote an episode where we didn't get a Hollywood star. We got a Studio City square, right? Mm-hmm. And in Studio City, we got this black square with Robin Big on the sidewalk. So we brought the mini horse out and dressed up like we were all Robin Big from the same clothes from the Robin Big era to go through the process of getting our square in Studio City instead of our star in Hollywood. And that was the last time I've seen the horse. So I don't know.
Well, this also was, I think, probably not the lesson one might expect to take from that show, which I genuinely loved. I remember, so the concept of the show, for people who aren't familiar, is you're a skateboarder, you get yourself into trouble, you go in places you're not, so you hire this guy to be your security guard / body man to follow you around and help you, and you guys become friends. It's this hilarious show. But I remember looking at that, and it expand, like, what I took from that was, like, skateboarding for you is your job. Your body and your ability to practice that thing is your livelihood. And if hiring a person to follow you around and be your bodyguard makes you better at that job, that's a good investment. And so I think people struggle, whether they're a writer or an entrepreneur, or they have some job that people make fun of, like social media influencer or whatever. They don't, like, we struggle with, like, hey, like, if you made widgets and you had to buy a van to deliver your widgets or a factory to make the widgets in, you'd be like, that's a cost of doing business. But I think for other businesses, we struggle to, like, invest in ourselves or spend on the things that will help us do that thing more. And that was weirdly a lesson I took from that show.
Listen to me. That's a stretch of a lesson from a concept of, like, where I wrote the concept for a skate video because I did not think my skateboarding was going to be of the quality to showcase compared to the other pros. So I wrote a funny skit of, hey, when we go to skate places in the street, security guards kick us out, but now they can talk to my security guard. I could have never thought in a million years that would have turned into a television show. Right. But I maximized sort of the opportunity, and it discovered an entirely new way for me to create both content and revenue and understand how to use media platforms to monetize them, which then scaled into Fantasy Factory, which was a show of just monetizing brand partnerships, and then, you know, Ridiculousness, which was ultimately an annuity that became, you know, multiple businesses off of that. But, you know, I think what it is, as opposed to a resource as an entrepreneur, it is this idea of, like, you can be very creative and opportunity can present itself by creating something that goes viral in a small community. And then you scale that to a bigger world. It opens up a lot of different opportunities for you.
Well, yeah. And it's also, I found in my life that whenever I'm like, you know, it would be crazy. What if I did X, right? Like, what if I did X? You're not normally supposed to do X, but I found that when I do it, it opens up, like my wife and I were sitting at the cafe across the street and she was like, you know, it'd be crazy. What if we bought that building and turned it into a bookstore? And I was like, yeah, we should, you know? And I think most of the time when people hear crazy ideas, they like to entertain it, but they won't actually do it. And to a certain degree, that's kind of your brand, is like, you take the fantasy or the wouldn't it be crazy if, and then you actually, you make it real.
Yeah. And look, I think it's, you know, I think the difference with sort of how I've evolved is, you know, when you look at the bookstore and you look at, hey, we should turn that into a bookstore. Well, that that is a lot more complex than just, yeah, let's do it, honey. Because yes, the reality of it is like, now you have to understand, well, do we have the time to do that? How much will it cost? Like, what about collecting all those books and the people? Do we understand how to hire the people to operate it? And what do we do if the income slows down? And then like, there's all this complexities, and then you have to answer that towards, well, is this what I want to take on in life? You know, a lot of times, you know, you would take that on and you would be lost in the idea of how cool it would be, and never take into the first and second order consequences of what it will do to your energy and your time, sure, your money and your soul to actually execute that. And I think that that's the growth for me over the last, you know, many years was ultimately, I used to say I had the ability to do anything, so I did everything, but I stood for nothing. And mm-hmm. ultimately, I just wasn't happy, you know? And when I really started looking at everything with this sort of holistic approach of like, I want to design a life that I live, and how does this play a part in my overall life and how I'm spending my time and how that time is delivering energy for me, and ultimately what is my mind thinking about in all of this? Am I enjoying the process of life? And then began to put all these big ideas through that filter. Then I began to grow bigger and bigger things with less and less effort that led me to a more harmonious, high quality existence, rather than just like the next bright, shiny object that I would sure. chase. Everything has purpose compared to what I was like back then, you know?
Yeah. One of the things I'm on guard with is like, so I get into what I get into because I love writing. That's what I love doing. And then if you're successful at that thing, you get a lot of opportunities and requests to do not that thing, right? Hey, do you want to come talk here? Hey, do you want to consult on this? Hey, do you want to write my book for me instead of one of your books? You basically get these ancillary or adjacent opportunities that can be more lucrative than the thing that you love, but they leave very little time for the thing that you love. So I'm curious, as you've gone on, you've explored all these different things, how has that changed your relationship with the thing you've been doing since you were like a tiny kid, the actual pleasure and presence and obsession with like just messing around with this piece of wood with wheels on it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not even a part of my life. You know what I mean?
Really?
I don't even like, it's not, it was something that I enjoyed and loved to do, but my passion has always been creating. You know what I mean? Like, I started my first company at 16 years old. And so it's like my actual, you know, sort of like drive to create different things is what's actually at the core. You know what I mean? And to me, it's, you know, when you think about like you have this access, you write these books, now people want you to do all these things. It's sort of your time and energy. And for me, I ended up deciding I would never compromise that ever again. And okay, well, how can I do that? Well, first of all, I need a certain amount of money, right? For me, yeah, I needed to earn $200 million and have $100 million invested that generated 5 to 7 million in passive income. So I had to get to there first, because you're, wow, the first thing that you do is you make decisions based off of that money. Well, what would you do if money was never an object? So that was sort of my first target. And then I began to master time. I began to track and plan out all of the rhythms of my life, like your holidays and birthdays and everything to do with your life is in this rhythm. So I began to design my time and get better and better at designing my time around what gave me energy. And I would use qualitative data. How do I feel about my life, work, and health every day, 0 to 10, to give me insights to what I needed to make changes on so that I could lead to a more probable higher energy future. And I just did that as a process on an ongoing basis, where today I live every moment of the day in a very high level of energy and joy by design. And then I have nothing pulling me towards dwelling or pushing me towards worrying. So I get to live in the ultra present basically all of my life. And the only time I drift out of the ultra present is when I'm creating a better future, which gives me the dopamine, which is exciting, or I'm rectifying something that has happened in the past because life comes at you. But for the most part, I've defended all aspects of my time and energy through a series of systematic evolution that allows me to live in a place of happiness every day.
How much of your day do you feel like is yours, and how or are you one of those people where like every minute is like, you know, when you talk to someone, they're like, yeah, I can talk tomorrow between 11:07 and 11:13 a.m. Yeah. Are you one of those people, or are you more of like a white space? I take it where it leads me, guys.
You know, depending on what it is, right? Because you got to think, the moment you take on a new project, you can see it in the second and third order consequences of your time. So you got to be incredibly careful. And to me, the key to happiness is perpetually evolving into your limitless potential. But if you don't have the time to actually reflect and like actually think about what you're learning as you're going and be able to take that evolution and apply it to some sort of action, it serves no purpose in you. And so for me, I am incredibly flexible on my time usage depending on how I feel and what I feel like doing. So I will, you know, I'm working on a software, a book, and a philosophy for 2.5 years now. And I paid the author $500,000. I've paid a few million dollars to the development team to work on the software. I have the entire team that I'm just spent paying on an ongoing basis to just ideate, because I have no pressure to when I need to get it done. But I only work about 25% of my time, because I spend the majority of time with my wife and kids or working on my health, right? So like, you use your money to buy your time, and then you stay incredibly flexible based off of how you feel, because the goal is to enjoy every single moment of your life, not just find moments that you get to enjoy. And so for me, not only is that extraordinary discipline, but it's also highly adaptive in the same way.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80.
Well, yeah, I'm always surprised. People are like, I'm doing this for my family. Like, that's why I work so hard. And then you're like, but how often do you see that family? And they're like, well, I'm gone, you know, 250 days a year or something. And you're like,
that doesn't sound like a rich life if you've sold your time to someone else.
But again, it's when you don't design all aspects of your existence and put some sort of quantifiable measurement against why you're doing it all that leads to where you're living in your ideal energy state. And for the most part, and this is how I used to be when I was younger. I thought if I did another television show, if I did another company, if I just made the money, that would be, then I could be happy and balanced, you know?
Yeah.
But instead, I started at zero and then built a balanced, harmonious existence and then grew beyond wealth, beyond my wildest dreams that transitioned me into a multi-generational thinker. And I did all of that in this beautiful, peaceful, harmonious way because as I grew and evolved, I got better and better at life. I got better and better at being balanced. I got better and better at my use of time. And then I'm just in this continual state of evolution and growth on all aspects of my life, but never sacrificing anything ever. And keep in mind this. I shoot 336 episodes of television a year. It is 4% of my time. I have taken that production and automated it and optimized it to where I can shoot 8 episodes of television in 5 hours and shoot 4 times a month for 10 months a year. But the output of the ROI of that is, you know, like dollar for minute is so extraordinary, but that's only because you have been someone who's meticulously learned how to master your time, energy, and mind share through continuous like development of systems and automation and optimization of those systems, you know.
No, I totally agree. I mean, the Stoics talk about this. Seneca talks about how, you know, he's like, life isn't short. We just waste a lot of it. And I think a lot of people work a lot. They just work very, very inefficiently. And they congratulate themselves for the grind, you know, the 20-hour days or the, you know, 100-hour weeks. And then you're like, yeah, but there's only like 20% of that that moved the needle in any way. The rest was fat that you could have cut or conversations that you didn't want to have or boundaries you didn't want to draw. You could have done that better.
Yeah. And look, and think about this, you know, like if Marcus is, you know, the things that you think about determine the quality of your mind, right?
Yeah.
So even if you are trying to find work-life balance and you're trying to work less, it's like if your mind is constantly being pulled back to dwelling in the past or worrying about the future, like your mind, your mind share can be equally as damaging regardless of how healthy you are and how sure. You try to spend more time with your family. If you're constantly being pulled by all of these forces and you don't find harmony in your existence, like you're never going to find that peace. And to me, you have to design it and you have to get better and better at it, right? Like if we know mastery is this extraordinarily important aspect of having a high quality life, well, look, you got to master you. And, sure. And if that's one of the core tenets of Stoicism, it's like, all right, well, how do you do that in the modern world? Well, you've got to understand what money means to you and master money. You've got to understand what time means to you and master time. You've got to understand what gives and takes energy and build your life around that. You have to learn to master your existence because the better you get at mastering your existence, the easier life becomes because with mastery comes ease of operation. You know, you have to be disciplined to be great at anything, but discipline is the beginning. When you're disciplined, it takes so much energy. Then it turns to habits. Habits take so much energy. When it finally turns to a way of life and intuitively who you are, where it's now how you subconsciously act, that's when you are living in a more masterful state where life and discipline and habits are easy because you no longer think about them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Ferriss sort of popularized this phrase, but you keep using the word, so I assume you agree. He talks about this idea of lifestyle design. Like if you're not going to figure out what you want your life to look like, and I think more specifically, what you want your days to look like, because your life is made up of days, then you're just winging it. And you're really at the mercy of like what other people say, what other people do, your moods, you know, the weather. You've got to come up with a plan, a system, and then you repeat that plan and system. There's flexibility within it, but you're not just like, what should I do today?
That's it. And but you got to think about it. It's like quarter, it's mornings to days, to weeks, to months, to quarters, to years. It's always in this rhythm. And guess what? You are changing every day. And the world is changing around you. So it's like you have to develop the skill to perpetually evolve and guide your evolution, because that's where self-mastery exists. You don't just all of a sudden get there. It's not like shooting pool or some other more binary skill that you can master. Like once you get really good at it, that's that. It's like the world is evolving and you're evolving. So you're changing. You have kids, like what you used to enjoy to do. Like I used to enjoy to skate. Skateboarding to the demise of my six-year-old, who called me a quitter yesterday. He's like, "You quit skateboarding?" I said, "Son, I was a pro for 20 years and I retired." But you just continually evolve and change, and your wants and needs. And I can say that who I am as a person changed as my success scaled, right? Like when you evolve to a place where you literally like can do whatever you want, right? Like it makes you really begin to understand the choices that you will, the things you will say yes to and no to, because you really have the true flexibility in making that decision. And that in itself becomes this new skill to develop and look at, because then you have to think about everything you do through the lens of what long-term impact does it have on my time and energy? And then sometimes some things you work on for years. In my case, you know, I've been designing a house for 10 years. I've been, you know, working on multiple different ongoing projects for years that I allow to overlap while I continue to build and launch businesses on an ongoing basis, still shoot television and continue to develop my philosophy and shoot the other things. These are all these things that I enjoy that are both short term and long term, and sort of understanding the life and legacy I want to create long term. And then bang, right down in the middle, I don't ever sacrifice my energy or my time to do anything as it relates to being balanced and happy and spending time with my family and picking my kids up at school and dropping my kids off and taking them to karate and taking my wife to date nights and movie nights and breakfast dates and to Thursday night talk nights and Wednesday night movie night tonight. You know, it's like I've built all of this into a rhythm that my family feels this balance and this energy of what's possible. And I want to be an archetype to people of this is how you live a harmonious existence, not and be hyper successful, rather than trying to find work-life balance and being ultra successful. And then like, oh, now I got to spend now I should go on vacation. You know what I mean? Type of vibe.
Like a life is made up of days. A day is made up of chunks. I think the morning being the most essential chunk of the day. Like I feel like if you get the morning right, a pretty good day inevitably follows. What does morning look like for you? What's your morning routine?
Well, look, my mornings are dependent, you know, on if I get up at 3:30 or I get up at 4:30. You know, a lot of times, like luckily for me, my wife started doing like 5 a.m. calls for her business. So she started wanting to go to bed earlier. I need about 7 hours of sleep. So if we get to bed at like 8:30 or 9, I'm getting up at 3:30 or 4. And then I start my day by sending her an email of every single thing that I'm doing that day. And that's generated from my chief of staff. And then I put a love quote on it so that she has insight to everything that I'm doing in that day. I have my coffee pre-made the night before, so it's brewing when I get up. I take a 8-ounce shot of salt water and do 5 minutes of red light therapy before I head downstairs and have my first cup of coffee before I send her. Then I send her that email, and then I go through all my time from the day before and fill out how my day looked to track all my time, because I fill out all my time in the calendar that was blank, and it all has tags that pump into a dashboard that shows me where I use all my time. Then I go back to my daily data, where every day I track, did I brain train, did I meditate, did I get up before 5, did I get in the gym, did I eat clean, meaning I had no sugar, no carbs, nothing but lean meat and vegetables, and did I not drink, and did I take my supplements? Those are what I track each day. And then I go through and fill out all of that. Then I fill out how do I feel 0 to 10 about my life, work, and health, that basically make up the data set that I have for years, right? Of years of collecting this data. So I could show you how, and I sent it to you.
You sent me your discipline spreadsheet. It was amazing. It's
all that stuff pulls out of my calendar into these dashboards. So I've gamified my discipline. I know that last month I did all of that 100%. You know what I mean? Like, I know that there's not ever a day off for me. As to me, every day is amazing, and that process is part of that sort of day. But then I brain train. And then I qualitatively rate the brain training to see how my mind feels each day. Then I meditate on a manifestation meditation. And then I wake my kids up, take my kids to school, and then meet the trainer at the house at 7:45. That's how basically every day for me starts.
Wow. I guess that all that data and all that writing is kind of a form of journaling. You're creating, you know, messages to yourself based on what you did. But do you have a journaling practice also, or is this mostly what you just sort of do in your head?
Yeah, look, my journaling practice is through the lens of milestones, right? Like, I'm in this sort of rapid state of evolution and in this continual sort of place of learning and growing and shifting. So I do my 5 and 10 year or a 5 and 15 year planning every quarter. And then I update those documents on an ongoing basis. And then I collect milestones of major thoughts and major things that are going on that are connected to it. Because the beauty of it, when you look at it all, when you layer it over top, you see how, like, the happier I am, how much more wealthier I am. You see how much more disciplined I am. You just see how, like, and when you layer the blood work on top of that, when you look at all the sets of data that I could lay over top of that sort of core growth of evolution and discipline, when you see it all together, the most profound aspect of it is that when I started doing qualitative data, asking myself about my life, how I felt 0 to 10 about my life, health, and work, the numbers were in 12s and 13s, where today they're at 23s. And it's like you really can see in all of these numbers how much truly happier you are. I can show you in the numbers that I went from, you know, working 36% of my time down to 26% of my time. Like, and as you master time, time slows down. And then you understand the value of time so deeply that you're so precious with it. And then here's one of the greatest assets of mastering time. There is no point in my life that I look at my kids and wonder where the time went. There is no point in my life where I ever contemplate the idea of where did the time go? Because I know exactly where all of it has gone, and I created, designed, and optimized it with the intent to enjoy it and experiencing it. And so I feel each and every year of my life as what another extraordinary year in the human experience. And I can't wait to continue to see what the future holds, because as tight as I plan it, I continue to evolve and change on such a level, and the universe continues to conspire to bring more opportunities and more interesting things that fit inside the parameter of my willingness to dedicate the time to these things that allow me to continually live this very exciting, rewarding, fulfilling life. And what do I want to do? I want to live 1 million hours. That's 114 years and 54 days. You know what I mean? Like, and sure. So I know that I got 8,760 a year, and that if I do something for 1 hour a day, that it's 4% of my life. So watching TV for 1 hour a day with my wife, I know, boy, that's a, if I watch 2 hours of TV, that's 8% of my life. It's so much more significant when you think about shooting 336 episodes of television. It's only 4% of your life. And really the value of your time, when you understand it more intuitively, you just use it in a much different way. You know?
No, I do a slightly less, much scaled down version of what you do. Part of my journaling practice, I use this little journal. It's called One Line a Day. And this is my one from 2017 to 2021. There's one line per day. So, but I think what I'm picking up that I think is valuable in what you're talking about in time management, you can't manage your time in the abstract. Or journal in the sort of generalities, you have to have marks that you're measuring against. You have to be, where was I last year? Where was I the year before? What was I doing, you know, at last December? By tracking what you're doing, you're able to see how you're doing relative to that point, whether you're doing the same things that you should be doing, whether you're stuck in the same holes, whether you're plateaued in some way. You have to be able to, you can't just be, hey, I write some stuff down every day. I think ideally you have a system or a flow that allows you to check where you are going relative to where you have been recently and not so recently.
Right. And look, it's no different than investing in stocks and watching your stock portfolio.
Sure.
And like, you know, it's like these quantified things that we apply on these simple to easy to understand things we're okay with, but trying to figure out a way to quantify our happiness and our joy and our overall quality of life has been abstract, and there's no framework for it. Right. And I think once I really developed that framework personally and then began to visualize it and use it, I could now like gather the insights that I needed to make the change that were all leading to a better life. But I digress towards this idea that I just think journaling is something I'm not doing that would be extraordinarily valuable for the reflective side of like my existence, right? Like sure. It's almost like it took me so many years before I discovered meditation. This conversation today is going to like make me has unlocked for me. It's like, man, just add into your world of just writing down one thing, right? Because one thing that me and my wife do as an exercise is each week we write down what we want to celebrate that week, and then we read them at the end of every year. And man, it is
you forget stuff that was awesome, and you take it for granted.
It's like just even that exercise where it's what do you want to celebrate this week? It's like going back and looking at the wins, and it's really funny when you celebrate something that ends up like not being what you expected, or you know, it's or it never even happened. You know what I mean? Like it's so fascinating. But now that we've done this all these years, and then we put them in a wine bottle, shake them out at the end of the year. Like, but then I give them to the chief of staff, and now I have this like list of all of them from all the years, which ends up creating this written body of work that's representative of our lives and that moment in time. And that's that power of journaling that gives you insight to your mind that for me, in this, just sitting here talking to you, just, it just hit me like the hardest ton of bricks ever, where I'm like, man, you have got to like, how many more times do you got to hear the word journal before you start doing it? Because I feel like when I originally journaled, I would write these comprehensive, like, you know, 30 minute long writing out all of these things that would just take up too much time and energy. And you have changed my life here today, because it's going to be just one line and I'm going to do it every single day from this point forward for the rest of my life. I want you to know that.
I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens, because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I love that. I love that. Well, I think you already are journaling in just a different form, but I think you would like this. And even if you guys were just collecting the gratitude thing you're doing with your wife, I think that would be awesome too. Well, okay. So speaking of reflecting on stuff, yeah. Here's something I'm curious about. So you have this goal, you have this idea that you have to get to a certain amount of wealth with a certain amount of passive income that will free you up to do stuff. I think we have these goals. Like, I'll talk to people, they have a number. They're like, my number is X. I am always really curious what it feels like when they get to that number. So what was that experience like for you? Was it amazing? Was it anticlimactic? Did you learn something?
Look, you change as a person. You change as a human being. Because you got to think about this. My goal, I needed to earn $200 million. Which is so, like, for most people, even for me, it was like, it's ambitious.
It's an incomprehensible number.
Yeah, it's and for most people, it's insane. Now, for me, I did in a self-assessment of like, what does money mean to me? Well, money's my lifestyle. What is my lifestyle? Well, I know that I'm probably going to want to spend between $2 and $3 million a year. Right. So that's what I started first, which is a lot of money. Right. And so It's like, now I'm being realistic, but that's who I am. And that's sort of the identity. Then I began to look at asset classes. Well, okay. Well, what would I need to do to generate that in a passive way, but still grow it? Then I discovered multifamily syndication. Right. So now I'm like, okay, you put for every $1 million, you get 7 to 10% and fully tax depreciated cash. That is basically tax free. And then, and that would be my goal right now. If I get to, $100 million, that I'm going to have 7 million, even if my, that gives me the ability to scale up to, the bigger lifestyle, but I should never need more than that, you know, whatever it is. And so initially I wanted to build a house for 35 million. I wanted to keep 15 million in cash at all times. I keep my expenses at 3 million and I wanted 50 million in real estate. Okay. And that would kick off, you know, the 7% that would cover everything. And then if something were to happen, I had the cash sitting there. And man, it's like when you have $100,000 invested in when your goal is getting to 50 million, it feels good. Because it's like, it wasn't like when I got to 800,000, when I got to 1.2 million, when I got to 20 million, I was like, man, I'm kind of set for life right now. Yeah. When I got to 50 million, it was like, I can't believe I made it. When I'm just at the edge of 100 million and I'm like, I feel like a completely different human being. Because it's one thing to have this. And now to give you an idea, I have a blended passive income and strategy that includes high yield savings account, ETF dividend stocks and a bonds portfolio, right? And sure. So this together creates this very low, single digit tax liability. And then this growth and security that's related to real estate investments and bonds and index type funds. What? But I still made $100 million last year in normal income. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah. Forget about, because I had no pressure that I had grown to that level, that so even when I make that level of money and pay an exorbitant amount of taxes on that, I'm not changing the way that I live. I'm not necessarily doing anything like extraordinary. I am just like growing and operating the plan that I created. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then it freed up my mind to be able to create opportunities that created much larger scale than I could have ever imagined. But I did all of that with never sacrificing my time, you know what I mean? Or my energy, right? In the sense of like what the type of world that I created and why. So I go back to this idea, even for someone like you, is you have to have that same financial strategy and where you're headed and why, because what's actually on the other side of it is this incredible feeling of security and peace. Right. And we talk about financial freedom, but it's financial harmony that I have where like I understood why I wanted money. I understood where I wanted to put it and what its purpose was. And then I understood my strategies on how I was going to make it, but I was not going to sacrifice my time and energy. So when I built companies, I did not operate these companies. I would co-find them, create them, finance them and bring them to marketing. Grow them and then have other people operate them. So I built the entire system and strategy and then was able to realize it, but it was all built around what was the ideal version of my life, right? And when you reach that level, like you change as a person. That's why I transitioned from self-preservation to generational preservation and began to look at like, man, I'm going to build a family bank structure that I'm going to give access and opportunity to Deerdex for thousands of years. I'm going, it's like it changed me as a person, but it gave me that much more clarity and that much more desire to be more disciplined and experience life on an even higher level, right? Like that's the other side of it. You would think that would have, there's no rest in that because I evolved here and I can see how much further I can grow. And I just want to keep getting better and better at life because that's actually what I enjoy doing the most,
So multifamily syndication, that's like real estate deals, basically people coming in doing like hard money stuff or development deals.
Basically what you would do is it's a LP and GP structure, but you're in a single LLC. So you own the building. So you get the depreciation and then you 1031 exchange it when you sell it. But you give up, 20% of the profits to the general partner who's an expert at operating the business or the building. Yeah. So if you put in 10 million, now you get, 700,000 in tax-free cash a year for that 10 million. Then when that in 5-10 years, they sell the building and now your 10 million in equity is worth $20 million, instead of paying taxes on that, you roll that into your next building. And sure. Now your basis for your 7% of cash is now $20 million instead of $10 million. But you don't, it takes no energy. And, sure. And you know, another great book in The Richest Man in Babylon, you're putting your money with like masters of this type of investment class that sure. have 30-year track histories of never losing principal and 18% IRRs through the 2008 collapse of real estate cycle. You're even looking at it through that lens, so that you're even making the decision on where you deploy capital with mastery, rather than just one of your homies that wants to buy a building. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I do. I think that stuff's really interesting, and I've done some of it myself. I think some people, particularly like artistic types or whatever, they have like an aversion to thinking that way because it feels dirty or it feels complicated. It feels like a distraction. Yeah. But I think ideally you get to a place where you have enough skill, you have enough understanding with how to sort of save money, invest money, grow it passively, that then you're freer in your business life to do, you know, if you want to do X, but nobody wants to fund it, you can fund it yourself. If you want to do the more artistically pure version of something, and you know it's not going to sell as much, you're like, I don't care. I'm not doing this for money. My money comes from over here. It's like you're creating, in a sense, like a trust fund for yourself, right? It's like your parents didn't give it to you. You earned it over here with this different side of your brain. And like when I went to write my first book about Stoic philosophy, my publisher was not like, that sounds like a real moneymaker, right? Like I was able to take less money. I was able to let that book grow slowly over time because investments I'd made in real estate, because of jobs I'd taken, savings I had, like, financial freedom isn't this thing that means you don't have to work anymore. I think what it means is you get to make pure and better work decisions because you're not thinking only in terms of maximizing income.
But forget about making pure and better work decisions. Think about your mind. It gives sure. you it's so much back to your mind, because it's never something that's one of the heaviest things that steals mind share in sure. between working on what you love, is the stress of finances and not understanding it and where are we going? Should I do this? Because a lot of times I get offered stuff all the time that it's like insane amount of money that I don't, it's not even like a question of whether or not I would do it. Absolutely not. It's not worth the yeah. time. I don't care what it is. I don't need more fame. Like yeah. I don't need when I did this last television deal, like I'm like, if it didn't take such little amount, if I hadn't optimized this thing to where I could shoot that much television in yeah. that little of time, I wouldn't do it, right? Like it's sure. but when I step back and look at like what that level of money can provide for the long term, and that they're willing to continue to pay it to me for a very long period of time, and I've just continued to optimize shooting it so it takes very little energy, it's adding to my longer vision of like, how do I continue to make impact beyond myself, but without the effort, but it's mind share over everything. That's the thing that
I'm, and
here's the thing about it. When it doesn't have to be complex like mine is, you could just straight up and down, I'm going to spend, you know, 50 grand a year. And my goal is to put like, make 150 and put 50 away in an index fund that doubles every 7 or 8 years. And then when I get to 1.5 million, I now have, you know, enough money to live on forever. And yeah. That you then when you get a deal that's going to make you 400, then you're like, perfect, I'll stay at 50 and then I'm going to put in 200. And now instead of it being 15 years from now, it's now going to be 6 years. But nobody thinks of money through that lens of like it is both security, mind share, and your way of being, that what would you do if money was not an object, like is something that most people don't ever have in their lifetime as an option, because it takes a certain amount of discipline. And I quit high school at 17. You know what I mean? I wasn't educated and don't understand money. I was a creative entrepreneur, and I built company after company after company that came and went, and I made millions and lost millions because I never understood money. I didn't even learn money till I was 40. I'm 48 years old. At 42, I had $600,000 in the strategy. You know what I mean? In a short amount of time, I had reached that goal because I had built the strategy to do it, but I didn't build this over 20 years. I learned all of this in the last 6 or 7 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, the number doesn't have to be, and almost for almost everyone listening, should not be anywhere in the ballpark of 200 million. It could be a retirement account of 200,000, but you're 26 years old or 28 years old, and you know that if you just keep doing what you're doing, that's going to get you somewhere where you want to go. I think the trouble is we tell ourselves, hey, if I get to X, if I do this, I won't have to think about money anymore. And then the mind, you have to have a certain amount of discipline to go, I don't need to think about this, right? Like a lot of people, my friend Ramit Sethi talks about this quite a bit. We have this problem where we go, hey, I'm earning a lot, I'm saving a lot. Now I have a lot and I'm still sweating whether I can upgrade my drink at Starbucks. We have trouble being too, a lot of people have trouble, the discipline that made them successful, made them good at money, they have trouble turning off when they should not have to sweat a $3 decision, as he says. You should be, he's saying, focus on the $30,000 decision, right? You go to your job every day and you're not maximizing your earning potential. And then you're kicking yourself that you could have got gas 15 cents cheaper down the road. You're not looking at the variable that really moves the needle for you.
But again, when you think about that there's so many things that are pulling. There's so many things that are pulling, like, because you're already in a bad place of being unbalanced or operating from a place of fear if you even think like that. Because again, think about what that is when it's dwelling, you know, where your mind shifts down to dwelling, it's pulling energy out of you. You know what I'm saying? It pushes up into worrying, like where you have to live in this state of rectifying the past, being future past or future present or present in order to be in this higher energetic state. And that's different people's makeups, is their relationship with money. And at the end of the day, you just want financial harmony. You just want it. You want to feel good about money and you need to learn it and understand it. Anxiety comes from when you just don't understand it and don't have a plan. And your only thing that you understand is how to have a job and hope you keep that job and pay for your expenses. But then you don't take care of yourself. You have bad relationships, like you have trauma. Yeah. You have low energy and you got to lose yourself in alcohol and watching Netflix, and then you're back in the job again, and then you wish you had a different job, but you're only hoping and wishing because you don't have the energy to ever create a better future for yourself. Like, you get trapped in your system. Then those, you know, we all are creating systems on an ongoing basis. It's not just about creating good systems that lead you to better habits. We intuitively drive everything into a systematic way of being in order to make it easier for us to operate. And some people's systems are literally like being at the job, hating the job, wanting to get to their friends, getting alcohol, eating a pizza, watching it like Netflix for 2 hours, regretting staying up 2 hours late, being tired at work again, sleeping, like going to bed early, oversleeping, then meeting a friend. Like, your system is built to keep you in this perpetual state of anxiety and lack of clarity. And then you have moments and you're like, I'm gonna motivate myself and do it now. But your system and your subconscious has been built in a way where you can only muster up a little bit of motivation. You snap right back into your same triggers and your same rhythms. You know, I like to say, like, you know, you can't change one part of your life without changing it all. The same way that you can't design one part of your life without designing it all, because you are a fully integrated, multidimensional being that is made up of a series of systems that create your existence, that integrate into the world around you. And if you don't look at it like that, you're just going to be continually like trying to create pockets of happiness or pockets of success rather than be a successful human being, you know?
Well, we started this marveling at how the Stoics had talked about this same stuff 2000 years ago. I think it's pretty amazing given what you're just saying. One of my favorite quotes from Seneca, he says, "Life without design is erratic," right? If you don't have a design, if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a system, you're just winging it. And you don't do a good job winging it when you're tired, when you're overworked, when you're distracted, when there's addictive substances and apps and things out there. Like, you got to create a system, and you got to be able to step back and see that from a distance so you can, as you're saying, see things in generational terms as opposed to just immediate terms. You got to get that perspective. And I think that's what journaling does, what reading does, what great podcasts do, is they allow you to step back, see it from a distance, make a plan, and then not be jerked around by every impulse or instinct.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that I love so much about, like, you know, from Marcus's point of like having so much, but this idea of being disciplined against all that you have access to and you could actually do is a much more better way of living. You know what I mean? And it's this idea of, even for him, still knowing that, like, you're still trying to, like, not let, you're trying to get to a place where nothing affects you, and that you're the one living with the joyful heart, you know, holy living with the, you know, joyful heart. Like, you're, it's like, don't let these outside forces, like, end up affecting your joy and your well-being, but you have to design your life in a way that you begin to grow away from the interdependency of these outside forces and eliminate the ones that actually, you know, disrupt you and actually sway the way that you live. And you have to do that through some sort of process or understanding. And that's what the qualitative data did for me. You know, by just asking myself how I felt about these parts of my life, you begin to see the things that you must change. And over time, I built defenses around my existence that today I have very little interdependencies that could ever actually disrupt my energy. And it is why I spend, you know, the majority of my life in a place of joy and rarely ever even have a negative thought, because I just simply don't have anything negative to think about.
Dude, I love this so much. And like I said, your show is actually a very big influence on me in a bunch of good ways. And I'm so glad we got to meet, and hope to see you in person again one of these days.
No doubt. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for listening. If you could rate this podcast and leave a review on iTunes, that would mean so much to us, and it would really help the show. We appreciate it, and I'll see you next episode. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery. the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.